G'day and welcome to another episode of Perth Property Insider. I'm your host, Jared Marlin. Today we've got Jay Sidhu on the podcast. He's from Vision Surveys Consulting. He's a subdivision and development expert. And we're going to dive deep into, is Perth property development dead? And it's a very valid question to ask because there's a lot of changes to the medium density R codes. There's changes to the public open space requirements that are proposed. There's changes to Heritage Act, number of things that are all getting thrown into the space, along with all the recent increases in the building costs and the timeframes. So really wanted to check in with Jay, get a feeling of what he's seeing and what his take on these various things that are going to be changing for property development in Perth. Let's go inside.
Welcome to Perth Property Insider, where you will learn how to grow your wealth and improve your life using Perth property. Our show is brought to you by Investors Edge Real Estate, the highly rated and award-winning property management, sales and buyers agency servicing the whole of Perth. Now, here's your host, Jared Mann.
Hey, Jay. Thanks for joining us today. Really excited to have you back on the podcast after so long. And I believe you're a happily married man now. So congratulations.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you. Yep. Feels good. Feels good to be back. Feels good to be married. Feels good to get the wedding planning out of the way, which is a lot more difficult than doing a development, I tell you that.
Well, you're off the market now, so to speak. So that's an update.
that's right, mate.
So much has been happening in the Perth market since we spoke as well. It's almost like different worlds because I think you were one of our first guests probably 2 years ago when the market was just starting to change, and we've both seen a lot of things happen since. What are you seeing in the market at the moment out there?
You can hear it on the news anyway, you know, how things really needs to go up, but then there's always stuff that's seemed to be implemented that is just trying to curb that. I don't know why, but you know, stuff like new policies and stuff that you think is counterproductive, really. And that's what I'm seeing. And you can see that apartment developments are just, you know, the new ones that they're looking at trying to start are just not starting because construction costing is just blown out. And now, you know, you can see infill sort of slowing down as well with mums and dads, developers, or even people trying to do a development now with all new policies coming out about public open space, etc., that it's just going to, you know, further curb that, especially if we don't really know where it is going, you know? Yeah.
So pretty difficult times. I know you guys are always busy sort of regardless of the ups and downs, and even in, you know, the down period, you seem to always be flat out. So you're obviously finding the people that can still do stuff and it makes sense. So who is it working for to actually progress a development at the moment? Is there any particular types of investors or types of developments that are more active?
Well, you got to remember that that there's different timelines in the development, and a lot of things, you know, the apartment developments that I'm working on are already almost at the end of the development. So those were affected by a timeline that's totally different now. So prelim strata plans may not be as many, but if the ones that are trying to be keeping it as built to rent, they are still looking at it and still progressing, which is good.
Is there much of that built to rent out there? And I know there was a few incentives in the national budget, but I haven't sort of linked up or seen any developers that are seriously looking at it. I'm sure it's the big end of town where they do it on a large enough scale where some of these tax incentives and other depreciation benefits that they get can be considerable. So are you seeing any of that type of stuff?
Well, we've got a few that we're working on, which apartment developments are built to rent. But also the other aspect of me saying built to rent is just people who are keeping their properties and just renting it out as well, just with or without the incentives that were there. They just don't want to sell it. And I think like those developments are still going. Well, they got to have to invest their money somewhere, and they want to do it in their property. And
building costs aren't getting cheaper probably. So
that's right. Yeah. So it's not for everyone, but I'm just letting you know what I'm seeing and what I'm working on at the moment. Yeah.
And of course, I guess if you're building to rent as well, there's some incentive there to, if you've got a site that's giving you next to nothing in rent or tenant issues and problems with the older property on there, and you know, it makes sense if you can progress that forward and keep a property that's then going to give you a better return on your money. And it's not always just about the uplift in capital growth, even though you want to at least be making some return. I guess people are willing to forego a bit of that margin if they just want to, you know, have that longer term view in mind and convert it to higher rental yield. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Yeah. And that term strategy for them and keeping it in is always in their forefront of mind. They've got to do something that's going to sort of help them in the future. And they're definitely still doing that. And it's different kinds of clients and different demographics. Some of them are single, some of them are married with children, some of them are returning from overseas, you know, the flurry of people that were returning during the COVID. Well, we're still living with the pandemic, but you know, when things were tough before, yeah, those are the guys who purchased them and are starting to do all those developments.
Yeah, okay. And what sort of impacts do you see with the changes to the medium density R codes? And I'm not, to be honest, across them that much. I see different things here and there, and I'm hearing different impacts that are coming out from people. What are some of the main ones that are going to shake up, or how is that going to impact the average person?
Well, we're just talking about the average person, then subdivisions that you thought were triplexes in the likes of, you know, there's some there where mums and dads are trying to do triplexes, thinking that if you just subdivide the land, then, you know, you'll be all right and sell it off. But you got to think about the end product. You think about the form, not just the land, right? So in design of the dwellings and buildings or the residential lots that you're trying to do, there are going to change. Okay. There's certain requirements, you know, open space requirements, orientations, things will change. And you may see the fact that you'll be pushed to, you know, rather than just doing a single, might be pushed to a double story. And that may increase, I mean, that will increase cost of development. And that is just not for many mums and dads out there trying to do subdivision. Okay. Also, obviously, there's the other part of it where bigger developers who have a more, I'm not going to say copy and paste, and more like a repeatability model.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't work for them because they're going to look at redesigning everything to try and fit. And then that whole model of with the repeatability comes cost savings wouldn't work for them if this is the case where they have to look at redesigning many of their items. And you can see that coming back, it was always comments that they were making, but now they'll have a transition period, but you'll still see that that's going to be an issue for a lot of them. But the outcome of medium density is hopefully for the better, right? So the design outcome is supposed to be for the better, but I think it feels like a rushed implementation.
And I guess there's always that transition period, right? You know, like I hate it when I go in to sell one of these apartments and there hasn't been thought put into the design or the aspects, or just, you know, I know they're trying to work towards better outcomes on all these things, but the reality is in the transition, it's going to be very hard. It's going to put quite a few people off. There's a lot of uncertainty and that makes it harder for everyone. So
it does, but you know, if you look at discussions that you and I have had on many developments in the past, I always start going, all right, what are we putting on this block at the end? So really, that's always been that model that medium density is going for. So rather than just carving up the land, that always think about that end outcome. What are you going to get? So if you can think of that, then you know, you should be able to tackle developments that you're looking at with medium density. But if you're just an average Joe and you just want to do a subdivision, you want to carve up that back block or your backyard, you may think that you have a block that could cater for anyone, but maybe not, because with the increase of cost of construction going to a two-story, which it may be the case for that particular development, will not be viable for the person buying it. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you mention increased costs there, obviously it's been across the board in all types of building, and that's led to a fair bit or a much lower appetite all round for people to build. So how is that sort of affecting projects? Are you seeing that you know, it's much harder to for things to stack up? Or are you seeing that, that with established prices now sort of getting coming back and people might start paying more of a premium for newer again, or that gap might come again soon? Or what's your feel for, I know it's hard to speak because you deal with clients from, you know, small to large, but what are you sort of seeing in relation to those increased costs and what's possible?
Well, a lot of the projects that I was working on was during the whole crux of the of that COVID issue that we were having. So, but how my clients and the projects that we were dealing with, we were always looking at cost plus contracts. So we manage those contracts well. We look at all the costing that comes in, and that's how we make sure that we don't end up with a builder that can't take the development. So I can't really comment on all those other cost increases and how that affects them. I just can say that if you're trying to do a project, make sure you safeguard yourself and go into an agreement with someone that you know that you're going to be feel comfortable that you're going to be able to finalize the project. I mean, cost increases are cost board. You don't have to listen about it from me. You can just read it. Right? You know, every week there was something about this item is increasing, that item is increasing. But also there was a graph, right? So you would have the start of a project, everything was increasing here, and the end of the project, which contractor was trying to look for job. And, you know, it sort of fluctuated going up and down. And yeah, I can still see that now. It just depends who wants the job will come to you, and who has too much of something would just say, I can't do it, and then increase the pricing. It's not going to work well for them if they put a very small place, especially if you come back running later on.
Hmm. So is there any sort of sweet spots or anything that you'd suggest investors consider at this time? And could it be those that have had land for a while, or, you know, is it still worth purchasing stuff and trying to take it forward straight away? Or is there certain sizes of projects that are more likely to work? What are you sort of suggesting at this time in the market?
Every project is going to be individual. I know I just am a broken record there when I mention this every time you ask about a subdivision or a development. I'm like, no, let me have a look at this development because everything is different. And it is always the mantra. So every project's different. Have a look at your costing that you're going to be needing for that project. And you have to make a feasible decision. And that decision ultimately will lie on you as a developer going forward. So I've always been in the mind that doing group dwelling sites were always pretty good for me, like units, townhouse units as well. And that's most of the projects that I'm currently doing. And that has been for a while now. So that's worked so far. But again, I caveat that with the fact that we weren't looking at selling those developments and the clients were mostly keeping them for rental purposes. So again, very different product.
It depends on your outcomes and what you're trying to achieve. And it's like at any point, at any time, a certain property could be a good deal for one person or a bad deal for another, even the same property. And then, you know, the numbers can be vastly different depending on what someone's trying to do. And so, yeah, you just have to be specific even. And I'd hate for someone to hear a one-word answer on a podcast like, no, now's not the time to do anything. It's, you know, you should just put your head in the sand for 12 months and, you know, people could lose a lot of opportunity as a result.
Yeah. No, that's it, you know?
From what I'm seeing as well, a lot of builders are starting to get a little more desperate for work and they're still trying to manage some of the contractors that are very busy within their, you know, workforces. So, but the actual parent organizations are needing the work more so now than they've done in the past. So, you know, willing to be a bit more flexible. And I'm seeing that the costs seem to have stabilized for the majority of things. Is that sort of in line with what you're seeing out there as well?
Yeah. Starting to talk to people who didn't want to talk to me before. But the whole cost stabilization thing, I just take it with a pinch of salt because, like I said before, I feel like it goes up and down. And every time you think you get comfortable with a particular cost, and then suddenly when someone gets busy, it changes. So it just depends on that graph and where things are in certain time.
Across the board, without giving too many secrets away, have you seen any changes to R codes that are coming up or going to affect specific suburbs or councils that would be worth, investigating further? Anything on the radar? Because I guess previously we always used to have some bigger ones that I was tracking and keeping an eye on, but I personally wasn't aware of anything major at the moment.
I think currently what everyone should be focusing on is all these draft policies in place. And the big ones would be, well, the current draft policy that's in place is the one with public open space contribution. Okay. So that's DC 2.3. That's operational policy, sorry, 2.3. And that's currently out for public consultation, right? Until about August this year. But what they're trying to do is basically, it's adding taxes, really. So you're going to see a lot of backlash from this from the developers out there, because even I think it's even a yield of one extra lot is going to potentially have effects on public open space contributions for cash and moat. Okay,
there used to be those cut off previously, didn't there?
Yeah, that's right. So it's very, very different. And you know, even though built stratas and public open space have always been a thing past, this particular operational policy really, really sort of tries to take the ambiguity out of it and says that, you know, built stratas are going to be affected by public open space contributions as well. So in a state where developments of apartments is wanted, you want housing supply and you need to increase it, they now come back with this, and that's creating that issue. And I just told you before, I'm not really seeing a lot of apartment developments, you know, start off the ground, even with the incentives there. I think it just doesn't stack up when they're looking at their numbers. I'm not really part of that. You know, I can tell you whether or not my prelim plans sort of go from prelim to sale to construction, but that tells me that, you know, it's difficult to get the numbers to stack up, right? And then you add this onto it, it's a problem. But not only that, you know, take the big developers out of it. How about the smaller mums and dads, you know, yourself doing a subdivision? If you're doing a three-lot subdivision.
Not just about the big end of town. You know, we see as far as private investors go as well, like the solution has to be multi-pronged and come across the board. Otherwise, how are we going to solve these rental crisis and housing affordability challenges, you know? So
that's right. That's right. Yeah. Even if you've got a 5% public open space cash in the policy for a smaller one, that's still a lot of money for some, you know, for a development, a small subdivision. That's cash. That's cash that you have to pay to get council clearance. That's a lot, right? I know that I've dealt in the past with a lot of public open space contribution cases, gone for mediations, tendered mediations, et cetera. And it's a very interesting part of it. But the ambiguity there, sort of, you could sort of talk to it, sort of reason with it, and sort of show why you can't. But with this operational policy, it's trying to be more, specific. Yeah. So it's still a draft planning policy, so it's out there. Go and have a read. You know, everyone will have their own take on it. But I think a lot of the organizations are going to put in a comment on this. And then on top of that, you also got developments for school sites and getting those contributions through, where Department of Education, if you've got subdivision more than five lots, and I'm not talking about the bigger broadacre subdivisions, because that was always there, right? But let's just say if you were doing a five lot subdivision, you could be up for contribution for Department of Education as well. I mean, the aim for that policy is to make sure that there's sufficient school in areas that you're developing. So, you know, the need for it is there. We understand what is being proposed there, then the intent is, but how does this help this other part of housing crisis where you give a little incentive and then you sort of take taxes back, sort of thing, you know? Yes.
Yeah. I did notice that they were extending the zero stamp duty for buyers for off the plan, which I thought was positive for that to continue to help the end purchase front for a buyer. But obviously, if there's building cost increases that have to be passed on in one way, shape or form, otherwise the developer can't make a profit and make it worthwhile. And then we throw these extra layers with the medium density R codes and the open space contributions, you know, it's really increasing that cost of what end product's going to need to be, I guess, working backwards for the make the developer even do the project. So that's for me going to leave a lot more upside, where established is going to have to grow into that upside to make the comparison with new closer. That's all I can see. Unless they start removing some of the more of the red tape, maybe things will get serious enough where they have to start reversing some of these things. I don't know.
I think what people need to know is that everyone should really read the median density curves, right? Kent is really good. I attend all the information sessions for median density. A lot of the stuff that was discussed, and maybe it's not a full version of everything that was brought forward when we were thinking about it and discussing it at Planning Commission, etc. But the intent is still the same. A lot of things that could have been brought forward weren't, but maybe hopefully one day it does. But if I'm just talking about just housing supply, I can see an issue with that, because big players will have some issues. But soon, with time, you would have to give this time, and it'll be for the better, you know? So, yeah. And also, on top of that as well, we've got July this year, which is what's now, it's June yet. So July this year, next month, you've got the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage.
I was going to ask you about this, but I wasn't sure about putting you on the spot with it. So if you didn't bring it up, I wasn't going to talk about it, but I did go and sign the petition the other day, because on the face of it, it does look pretty concerning, and another layer of red tape and cost as well. So what's your take on that? And explain what it is first for the listeners as well.
Okay, well, that's going to put me on the spot, because but it, look, there's always the mapping system of that, the areas that that are affected by what is the word that I'm trying to look at, the heritage, right? So all this does is just puts into consideration of if you were doing works in the area and in certain tiers, I believe, from, this is all from my head, sorry, so please do go and read it yourself. But there's stuff that are exempt and stuff that needs permit and stuff that needs a plan put in place to do. And I'm only going to talk about subdivisions, but it seems that if it was a subdivision and you're just doing normal works that are exempt, then you should be okay, right, within those areas. But if you're trying to do things which are going to go into different tiers, then you just have to do extra work, or extra, there's just a process in place for you to follow that you'll have to do. So it's just something different. People are going to go through something that's different that they're not really doing at the moment, which will create some angst for a little bit. But again, intent is good, right? The intent here is great. And we pay respects to people and the original custodians of the land. So,
well, you'd hate the situation where, you know, development or subdivisions not being considered, especially on important sites and important places. But I guess we'll have to practically see how it affects things across the board, because that's where the implementation in the shorter term can really add time and cost. So hopefully it'll come out smoothly. So getting back to just the average person that's starting out and might be doing a duplex or a triplex development, is there some important things to consider when you're looking at that type of site? Even if you're not planning to develop it now, you might be looking at a site to sit on, rent out for a while, and then come and revisit 5+ years. What are the sort of high level important things for that person to consider and to do? And that'd be a great way to sort of end our podcast, because I know there is quite a few buyers from the East Coast that have probably got no idea, that listen to the podcasts, that are looking for development stuff. They're kind of relying on their buyer's agent that might also be from the East Coast, that doesn't have as much idea. You know, you'd hate for them to be paying, you know, a really high price for the development potential, but then, you know, working out later, oh, I can't actually do, you know, what I thought, or I paid too much for this potential. So any words of advice there?
Well, things like that are always going to stay the same with me. And you've asked me this a few times, and I think I've been on this show a few times, and I always mention the same things again. Always check your zoning. Always check the relevant local government policies in the area. Check the WAPC for any state policies that affect your property. And then on top of that, if it's zoned medium density, which is a 32 R60, so you want to look at that as well, okay? And then think of the build outcome. Always think of the build outcome. If you were a developer trying to carve out your backyard, What can you put out there? Okay. What can you do there? Because whatever you think you can do there or can be done there is what the potential buyer would do. And you as a seller would need to sell something that someone will be able to use. So a few things, you know, get your pitch, get your contour surveys done. Boundary surveys, very important. Find out, you know, what is or isn't encroaching, if anything, that's there that you potentially may or may not need to deal with in the future. If you're keeping something for so long as about like what you mentioned about 5 years, do note that things change. So, you know, it could be for the better, it could be for the worse, but, you know, as a developer, you would just have to make a calculated risk move. And that's what we all do. I mean, that's what you do. That's what I do. It just, you got to be in the game if you want to do it. But more often than not, you know, you'll be advised of potential changes coming, et cetera. There's always things that you will have to be able to comment on. So just be in the know, talk to your consultants, the likes of you, finding out what's new in the area. Talk to me. Is there any new regulations that should be affecting you? You know, the public open space thing is a big thing. If cash in lieu is a thing that you, is a real deal breaker for you, then really don't go for the particular development that are going to be affected quite badly. Go for something else. And, you know, we can also look at with the new policy with medium density, that whole document brought in small dwellings as well, and the potential of ancillary dwellings, particular a certain number within a development that is allowed, ancillary dwellings, be it in multiple dwellings or group dwellings as well. So those are things that you could consider. You know, what's the outcome that you're going for? Are you going for a full land-based development, or are you going to create some properties that you're going to just rent out? Again, I realize that whenever I say or try and, you know, talk to the audience, your audience, it's quite broad, because it just depends on what that particular person is thinking that they want to do. And and like I said as well, every subdivision is different. Every development is different. The costing could vary so much from one suburb to the next. So, yeah. But to be in the know is great. So be in the know, find out what you need to know, talk to the right people that you need to talk to, and make the best decision that you can.
And do you suggest that someone goes ahead and gets an approval for something, and then, you know, typically the conditional subdivision approvals and other approvals might only last 3 years. Like, is it worth getting it or go and sort of prevent things changing on you, or is it not best to outlay the money or and wait and then potentially have a lot of things change? Like, where do you sit on that? I know it can be personal preference again.
Well, look, sometimes if you're trying to find out what the answer is, if you can or can't develop and you want to just sleep well at night, go and get an approval. You've got the conditional approval there. You know you can subdivide once you meet the conditions, then great. But you're not going to get 100% from a consultant, because the consultant isn't the one doing the determination. Things can change, right? So you've got a conditional approval, and we will help, or your consultant or myself can help you to get that conditional approval if we think we can. Then, you know, at least you have it there. And like you said, last for a certain period of time. WAPC application conditional approvals are not something that you can extend. So you'll have to reapply later. But at least that gives you 3 years, right?
Yeah. I guess it depends on your time frame and how likely you might be to do something in the meantime as well in that mix.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jay. We'll have to get you back again more frequently. And I appreciate being able to get into your schedule, because I know how busy you are.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, look, happy to chat about a particular topic in more detail next time, but today just more general of what's been happening out there. Yeah.
And I'll put your details in the show notes. And if anyone is seriously looking to move a project forward or needs some input, then they can reach out to you.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. All right. See you. Bye.
Bye.
Just a reminder, the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature. As we don't know your specific situation, you should always seek professional advice before taking any action. For free market reports on your suburb of interest and other helpful resources to grow your wealth, make sure you join my property investor update at investorsedge.com. perthproperty.com.au/join. And finally, make sure you're a member of our Perth Property Investment Facebook group. To be part of the conversation with other like-minded investors, get help to your questions, and get a feel for what's going on out there in the market. I'll see you in the group.